The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. Joining me today is Megan McCoy. She's a professor at Kansas State University. And Megan is a fireball who wants to bring attention to the world of money talk and the discussion of money through financial therapy. And she's here today to tell you more about the subject of money therapy. Hopefully we'll get some tools and tips to help those in need. Megan, welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So glad you're able to join us in our program. You have ties here to Philadelphia. You did some of your training towards your PhD at Drexel University right here in our backyard. Welcome back to the Philadelphia region again, at least through teleconference. You're an advocate for financial teamwork and a believer that financial teamwork can help achieve success. A company that I'm with, Cordasco Financial Network, we're big believers that it takes a team to achieve financial success. We even have a multi-advisor approach, which is unique compared to other registered financial advisory firms. Can you tell us more about the skill of financial teamwork, what skill set that takes, and why financial teamwork is something you showcase as important?
So I work a lot with couples, and what my research has found is that qualitatively, money fights are just different than other kinds of fights. There's this great researcher named Jeffrey Dew who discovered that money has all these different meanings for us. And so when couples start talking about money, sometimes they're talking about two different things, so they can't work on a unified goal. And so I love using multiple resources, multiple professions to really aid in giving couples skills to talk about money so that they can get past all those obstacles and roadblocks and really not only reach financial well-being, but overall well-being.
Now, why don't more take that approach? The name of my company is Cordasco Financial Network. That network is so that we can help someone when it comes to where their money meets their life. We can reach deep to other professionals, and even amongst our own team, we have specialists and individuals that have kind of unique talents in maybe one or two or three aspects of the many aspects that come into financial planning, financial well-being. But it still seems that when it comes to working with someone on your finances, your money, society is still in this silo place where there's one person who wants to be your broker when it comes to stocks, or if an insurance person when it comes to your insurance, or tax person when it comes to taxes. But it doesn't seem that that formula is the key to really have the higher probability of success when it comes to the world of navigating money where it touches people's lives.
Right. I think there's so many reasons. I think we tend to think of money as something like there's a right and wrong answer. We just need to get a formula or get a spreadsheet and everything will be perfect. Like when I was talking to Morningstar about an app they're creating, we were talking to a couple about how much we wanted to spend on the house, and they were having an argument about it. We talked about it for a while, and then someone on the team who was an IT person said, well, why don't you just tell them the right amount of money that they should spend? And I'm like, there's no right amount of money. It's dependent on millions of variables, as well as like your internal sense of financial stress and what you want and what you privilege in life. And so I think we tend to think of we just need to get the right answer, when really the right answer looks unique to every single one of our clients. And it's only through addressing them holistically and taking care of their whole financial needs, and as well as their couple needs and their future desires, that we can really address their financial well-being. No spreadsheet or formula is going to give you that.
Boy, and it's so non-black or white. And that's what in 35 years of me trying to help navigate people, That's the beauty of helping someone with their finances. Unless you really intimately know the individuals and what they want from life, money connects to life, but it's not A plus B equals C. It's not so black and white. You used the word holistic, and that's been around for a little bit. But I still find people kind of scratch their head. What does that mean?
Well, I think holistic is the idea that, like people call it like life planning or money quotient. And there's all these terms to say, we can't just look at just your taxes, because your taxes are going to impact your estate planning. It's going to impact your saving plans. It's going to impact all these other vehicles of your life. And then all of those aspects are based on your values, your needs versus your wants, your future goals, and what are you working towards. And so holistic to me is taking care of how Klontz and his team call it, the internal and external aspects about money. We need a spending plan in place. We need tax plan in place, but we also need to know, what are your future goals with your money? What will make you feel safe with your money? How much risk can you take on? How much stress will you be under if you take on those risks? All those things. Mm-hmm. And so I love how he talks about internal and external side of money. And I think that's a great way of thinking the holistic care of the person.
You know, you're doing God's work, because you are training the next generation of those who will take over for me. And you're training them in something called a financial therapy certification. And you can maybe clarify that for me. But my question is this: for our audience, can you share with us what financial therapy is and what you're actually teaching and what the end result will actually look like?
At Kansas State, we teach financial therapy as something you do. And what we see financial therapy is kind of like counseling-like skills. Like, there was this whole series of articles by Dubofsky and Sussman where they found something like 75% of financial planners had clients crying in their room, telling them secrets, asking them if they should get divorced. And so what we realized is that...
By the way, I don't mean to interrupt, but that's my office. There's a lot of tissues that get used, and it's everything from, you know, could there be a divorce to a loved one that might have an addiction issue, or just somebody who retires and never realized it was going to be so lonely, especially on the men's side of things, because they're not so emotional and they don't talk about their feelings, but they feel lost sometimes after retiring. So I get what you're saying.
Kansas State is just trying to give counseling-like skills to financial planners. They don't want them to be therapists, but we want them to learn how to ask the right questions, how to navigate couples' dynamics so that you're working on the entire couple, just not the partner who speaks up the most, how to apply what do we know from the research in family therapy and psychology and counseling that can be adapted to your work as a financial planner. There's also the Financial Therapy Association, which is taking financial therapy even further, and they're working towards creating a separate profession of certified financial therapists that are truly cross-trained. But at Kansas State, we teach financial therapy as something you do inside your home discipline.
That word therapy is a fear word for many. And I found that in my practice. And you can come up with the word coach, or you can come up with something different. Or do you not even label this and you make it a practice? That word is so scary to some that they would rather have financial chaos. About 15 years ago, somebody challenged me to the success of my business. Why is there success? And I started asking people I work with, and they came up with, you talk to us a certain way. And as I dug into that, I realized we weren't talking so much about numbers. We weren't so much talking about lines on a tax return or percentages. We were talking about the life side. And as I learned more about this, I've learned that there's this thing out there of getting people to open up. And I guess technically that's therapy. Here's my problem right now. We've dropped the word coaching and therapy. Now it's just make it part of the practice. It's the way we act and engage. I'm at the point where I separate, if it's a husband and wife, if it's two individuals looking to join together, maybe they're thinking about getting married, maybe they're currently married. I like to talk to them independently, almost separate, because we can't seem to get that full, deep openness, because one person wants to wait to the other person answers a question or responds to something. Nobody's practicing that. And it's so odd that people look at this and say, well, wait a minute, how come you want to talk to my spouse and not me? I'm the person who handles the stocks and bonds. It's their money too. Can we start to build an open relationship? But why is that so hard, especially for baby boomers today? And are we doing it wrong?
Well, I don't think you're necessarily doing it wrong. If you use those separate sessions to give the person who doesn't have the
voice,
esteem, yeah, right, that doesn't have the voice, to have a voice in front of their partner. So I think that eventually, if you do separately to get them to be honest and to create that trust and bond you need with both partners, and then bring them together with the skills to be assertive. Because that's something we learn in couples work. It's not couples that fight that do bad. It's the couples that avoid conflict that do really bad, because through conflict, through being assertive, you're able to tell your wishes to your partner and they're able to respond to your wishes. So I think if you're able to bring them back with new skills to feel confident to say their wishes, that's the goal. Is to get them more open with one another, because otherwise it might become that you are too much the in-between.
And it takes training and it takes the ability, but it's not so much going in by design. I like it when a lot of things just happen organically and it just evolves. I'm not here to say that somebody's intimidated by a spouse. There's some cases like that, but they're rare. You kind of see it, and I look for it in the communication of the initial engagement, or if I'm working on problem solving or dealing with a pain point that somebody might have as a client. I try to read the room a little bit, and I try to read the relationship. And there's many relationships we have where there's a husband and wife and they're on the phone together or they're in together. And one person leads and the other one tends to nod their head and they look like they're on the same page. Can we talk a little bit about how you coach or teach as you're helping those get that certification? How much does demographics play in? Because I find if I'm dealing with the children of my clients who tend to be baby boomers, they have a total different relationship around money. If they're married, they tend to be very open and very even, at least the bulk of what I'm seeing. But yet, if I'm dealing with baby boomers, it tends to be more lopsided. There tends to be more of one individual that wants to talk about the money, and there's another person who kind of leaves it up to them. Not as much, how do I put it? I don't want to say togetherness, because there is togetherness, but the priority of money is different.
One of the things I think of, as I was thinking of when you were talking, is that, you know, we talk about opposites attract, but the research shows that's not actually true, that we tend to marry people who are very similar to us, except for when it comes to money. That's where you'll see the dynamics of people being attracted to their opposite. The saver falls in love with the spender, or the money avoidance falls in love with the person who's vigilant. And so I think sometimes it's difficult to bridge a gap, because there's so many reasons why they might not be working as a team. Potentially one partner feels insecure about their ability to talk about money, like they feel like they don't know enough to talk, or potentially, like the example you gave, they don't feel like they contributed enough, even though they did in a different way, that they don't feel like the power to talk about it. Or it might be that they just don't like talking about money and just want to avoid it for that reason, and are glad that their partner takes the lead. So I think figuring out the why the dynamics are is really essential, because even though the presentation is going to look the same, I think there's a couple different reasons why they're presenting that way.
Mm-hmm. There's something called a DIY. That's a do-it-yourself investor. And so for do-it-yourself investors, I tend to get them later in life, where they'll come to me, especially in times like this with health things going on. People have health concerns based on what's happening in the world, and they're worried about their loved ones and their loved ones not being prepared if they should pass away, because they've been the one doing it all the time. And so we get later in life individuals who have faced either a health crisis or now are seeing a health crisis around them, starting to not feel as comfortable and confident about what happens to their wealth when their life is no longer part of it and their other loved ones are going to be part of it. So we're in the challenge now of trying to take someone who never used an advisor, but you needs an advisor because they don't have confidence to those around them being able to do what they did. How do you work with that? What advice can you give in that area?
I think a big one is empowering the people they feel aren't capable. I think that's a really big thing, because it sounds like their goal is to keep the 100% control of the finances, or transfer the control of the finances from them to you.
Correct.
Instead of them to their partner. And so I think it's, you know, when we talk about over under functioning partners, we have to do both things. The over functioner around the money needs to trust their partner is capable, needs to believe in them, needs to know that they're giving, you're going to help give them skills to be capable, while the under functioner needs to get empowered and believe in themselves and see this as something important as well. So I think addressing both partners, if it is a husband, wife, or a dyad like that, or if it's a parent child, again, doing that, because even though it's a loving thing to take care of everything, that overly taking care of signals the other person that you don't believe in them, that you don't think they're competent. And even though it's a loving action, teaching them that, like, you're accidentally saying to your partner or to your child that you don't believe that they're competent.
And here's what's interesting, even broken down to the children. So let's say somebody's in their 70s, maybe their 80s, and they're saying, geez, you know, something could happen to me. I just lost a friend. I never thought that my life would change like this. Or they're watching the news and they're seeing all that's going on. We really try to bridge that gap with their children. But yet so many advisors avoid the children because the children tend to be tech savvy, VCon, and they're afraid to, like, go in. But to me, I really like embracing the kids, but that's where that teamwork comes in, because we're all a team. It's not like, hey, we're jumping in here and we're going to control mom and dad's money here and we'll bring you in later. You know, one of those things that are really scary for a do-it-yourself person, they may have been at Vanguard or Fidelity, they've been doing most of their stuff their whole lifetime, and pulling in the team can be a scary thing. And for many advisors, they just tend to focus on one end. So that whole teamwork thing is so important. So I get what you're saying there. Hey, what tips can you give for those that don't open up so easily about this topic? Those listening to us right now and scratching their head and saying, geez, you know what? Are we really as open as we should be? And even for those who are listening to us that might not work with a financial advisor, are there things out there? I know you've been developing things that, like, tools and apps that can at least get people started down this path of being more open and fair in the relationships they have and where their relationships in their life touch their money.
Right. I think what's interesting is that money truly is the last taboo. Like, I know as I was a therapist, we talked about sex and religion and all these other taboos so easily, but money was still hard for us. And I think that's so important to recognize that money conversations are difficult to navigate, and being compassionate to yourself and your partner that you're probably going to say the wrong thing, but saying something is better than not saying anything at all. Like, you can't do wrong if you take an open mind, come in there with a not knowing stance, and really want to share this information in a kind way. That you're giving skills to your partner, your children, by having these awkward conversations. So I think the biggest things I want to say is normalize that it's difficult, and emphasize how much of a gift you're giving by entering into these conversations.
Really, really appreciate the work you're doing and helping those financial advisors and those that work in the world of money, getting them prepared, because I do believe, at least for my children coming up, I'm hoping my industry looks a lot like what you're teaching. And that is, it's not just about the numbers. It's about you, what you want out of life, where you find your happiness, and where your money meets that life that you want to live.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Oh, I hope all your listeners go and talk to their partners and their kids today about money.
Thanks for taking time away from your kids and your husband and joining us. So thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
You're listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. I'm Steve Cordesco. If you think you need an open and honest conversation with family members, maybe your children, you, your spouse, be more than happy to reach out. Every day I talk to different people, and that's the fun part of my job. If I can help make a breakthrough, and our team can help you break through when it comes to your wealth and where it touches your life, we're here for you. Love to be able to have that conversation. Have a great day. Thanks for being part of the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordesco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.